time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
How true that is. Outsiders this week are Tim Kolbatch, veteran political and economic journalist, author of the new book Dick Hamer, The Liberal Liberal. That's out now, published by Scribe. With Tim too, Anthony Lowenstein. He's a Guardian columnist, author of many books, including Prophets of Doom, and Sabine Wolfe from JWS Research. Good morning to you all.
Hi there.
Well, we are, it would seem. We're certainly engaged in combat operations in Iraq, or about to be. The PM has hit the airwaves.
Our job is not just to deal with the symptoms of extremism. We must also deal with its origin. In this case, it's the extremism of the ISIL movement in Iraq and Syria. The beheadings, the crucifixions, mass executions, ethnic cleansing and sexual slavery that are occurring in northern Iraq and Syria are only the beginning if ISIL has its way.
Andy Lowenstein, did we have any choice but to get involved?
We had a huge choice. I mean, I think one of the remarkable things about our current Iraq engagement, which of course is the third time we've been back in Iraq in less than 30 years, is how little discussion there's been about what we're doing there. We're told that the ISIL is extreme, which it is. We're told that we're there for a humanitarian mission. But what we're not talking about, unless you actually read some of the other kind of press, which is little discussed in Australia, is the reality of what America is trying to do there, which we're told is to bomb ISIL, degrade it, actually is not working and will not work. We've even heard in the last week or so from Kurds, from Yazidis, in fact also from so-called moderate Syrians in Syria, saying that the bombing campaign against ISIL was not working. In fact, ISIL is progressing further rather than regressing. And I think we have to ask ourselves, if the actual mission is to degrade and destroy, or at least reduce the power of ISIL, is what we're doing actually worsening the situation? Because so little questions are being asked about what we're actually doing there. And to me, this is not really about destroying terrorism, when in reality, as most of me listeners will be aware, a lot of the forces that we're supporting in this mission, Saudi Arabia and others, are in fact the main source of extremism in that part of the world. So unfortunately, I think I'm not surprised. You mentioned a minute ago the polling results in Australia, and I think it was in the Murdoch press this today.
Yep.
That a lot of Australians were very supportive of what's going on. I'm not surprised about that, but I would also say that most of the press is not doing a very good job to explain what we're actually doing over there in the first place.
And Sabine, certainly since the airstrikes began, we've seen a change of tactic by ISIS. We've seen the big exposed columns they have as a group embedded themselves more in the cities and towns that they occupy. This is going to be an incredibly difficult thing, and a lot of the commentary written even in the big papers yesterday here is talking about where this conflict goes from here, how it might be won, and more importantly, what exactly that winning might involve, which is unclear.
So here's the thing about airstrikes, right, is that they don't work on their own. I mean, the last time you can say an airstrike conclusively ended a war is maybe, and this is even controversial, Nagasaki. But, you know, the idea that we will be able to go in, you know, drop some bombs from some super hornets and get out is just wrong. And so I think what Anthony was saying before is entirely right. People support this war, but they're not really sure what it will involve yet. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that we will have to send in ground forces. And that's a very different proposition. And as we learnt in the last Iraq War, it's we're going to be there for a long time.
And Tim Kolbatch, as Anthony mentions too, that the polling results today are quite emphatic, and would suggest that the government, in its prosecution of this as a political point, have made a pretty compelling case. Has it been one that's, though, given us the full information? Has it been as clear an explanation as it might have been?
The government is making it up as it goes along. It can only be doing that because it's working in a coalition with other countries. Anthony mentioned ISIS is changing its tactics to make it more difficult to bomb. So all these things are going to... what we actually do, I think, is unclear probably to the government itself. We'll work that out as we go along, because what we've done basically is to make a commitment to do something to help.
Is that necessarily problematic, Tim, or is that just the inevitable consequence of the complexities of this situation?
I think it's an inevitable consequence of the complexity of the situation, but I think I'd just go back to my long memory. You were kind enough to call me a veteran journalist. And
I'm sorry.
Truth hurts. I remember when the Vietnam War was extremely popular, and in fact the Liberals won an election on it in 1966, only for it to then turn savagely against the government subsequently. And there are big risks for Tony Abbott in this. There are risks at the Middle Eastern end. Everyone's ultimate risk nightmare would be for an Australian pilot, for example, to be captured by ISIS. Mm. But there are also risks here in Australia, because it is, in part, here it's going to be a battle for the hearts and minds of young Muslim Australians. And it's so crucial to keep the distinction from that we are fighting terrorism, or fighting ISIS rather than fighting Muslims.
And that polling, Anthony Lowenstein, although it's emphatic today, and we saw those results, 62% of Australians supporting Australia's decision to commence airstrikes, that polling doesn't give an indication of what Tim hints at there, of perhaps the cultural affiliation of the people polled, which is another aspect of this, which is perhaps not being handled as with even the clarity of the commitment to combat operations.
That's being very subtle, Jonathan. Yes, that's very true.
Thank you, Ed.
I think one of the problems is I obviously don't know exactly who the Murdoch press interviewed, but I can be rest assured that not a lot of Muslims are supporting it. A lot of Muslims feel profoundly angered with what ISIS is doing, what it represents, how it is defaming their religion. That is very clear. But unfortunately, the message is being so muddied by the ways in which I think many of the press and the politicians are talking about this issue, that on the one hand, you had yesterday in the Australian newspaper, a senior Liberal talking about this war is not about Islam, it's about extremism. That's true, and yet you have a government, and I would argue also a Labor opposition, who are fueling this problem. I think also it's really important to remember that the press here, I think it's Fairfax Press, ABC sometimes, unfortunately, and also the Murdoch press, routinely go to the same kind of so-called counter-terrorism experts who have been wrong on pretty much everything since 9/11. So David Kilcullen, Peter Lay, many, many others who are regularly appearing as experts on these issues, interviewed, asked for their opinion. They actually don't know what they're doing. They might be military experts, but in fact they've been wrong on pretty much every call. And I think it's a shame that we are being fed this kind of information, which says that generally these people always make the same point. The war should be longer, there should be boots on the ground, and it's going to be a long engagement. Rather than actually saying, well, how have those last engagements been going? Are we going to be continually mopping up from the last time? So I hope.
Kilcullen makes a really, I thought, a good point in his piece, and is prominent in The Australian yesterday, where, yes, he makes those arguments, but he also says, let's this time try and imagine an endpoint. Let's, having devised that endpoint, try and work out strategically back from there.
Let's just hope that endpoint isn't another photo opportunity on an aircraft carrier with the words "mission accomplished" behind it.
Yes. Now, in the midst of all of that, this, of course, happened within the Parliament.
I asked the Speaker to rethink that decision, and my understanding is that it was an interim decision, that it would be looked at again in the light of security advice that will come in coming days, and I'm sure that the matter will be fully resolved before the Parliament comes back in a fortnight.
And there we had it late last week, the ban on head coverings, facial concealment within the Parliament. Tim Kolbach, to put the veteran hat back on again, have you ever seen the like?
The veteran headscarf? No, this is... And it is bizarre because, as the Prime Minister has said, this is really not the most important issue facing the nation. And like him, I've never seen anybody in Parliament House, and I worked there for 24 years, I've never seen anyone wearing a burqa or niqab. So I don't know what was the need for this this ruling, particularly as everybody who comes in Parliament House has to go through security.
Yes, which if there is an issue of what's being concealed by flowing garments, then it doesn't say much, Sabine Wolf.
That will be caught at the door.
Well, you would think so. I think they need to get their money back from the people who sold the metal detectors.
Neither the burqa nor the niqab is some sort of lead shield that stops the metal detector from doing its job. I mean, if you're screened, you're screened. But I think what's really interesting about this last week has been it really shows how little control Abbott has over his backbench, certain elements of his backbench. So you've got Corey Bernardi and George Christensen sort of going off script here, but I don't see any evidence that Abbott's been doing the hard yards with people in the Senate and with people like Christensen to work with them and be alive to their concerns and sort of stop them, as it were, from distracting from the government's message. So the ability of Abbott to manage his backbench and to manage the Senate, I think, is absolutely critical and to his continued success as Prime Minister. And I'm not seeing any evidence of that being the case.
Beyond that, Andy Lowenstein, we had comments from the Prime Minister. Yes, he finds it confronting the burqa, if he's ever seen one, or the niqab. His chief of staff reported in the papers of having told the people pushing for the ban that if they were going to do that, they needed to couch it in terms of a security issue. Is there a subtext in all this, Anthony? Is there a sense from the government that there is some sort of political advantage in attaching itself to this as a campaign?
I think there's a perceived advantage. Whether there is, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's very clear that I think Sabine's point on the one hand is possibly correct, that there is an idea somehow that there are elements of the Liberal backbench who are rather unruly. But another way to look at it, in fact, is that Abbott's rather happy with that kind of messaging. He can come in then as the mature uncle at the end of the week and sort of put down his unruly backbench and say, listen, I'm going to speak sense about this issue. But ultimately, the subtext is very clear, to say to the wider community that, yes, we want to include Muslims in our Team Australia, so to speak, but ultimately there is a sense that a lot of people in the Liberal Party feel profoundly uncomfortable with the Muslim community. The engagement with the Muslim community is so minimal. And anyone who you speak to in the Muslim community, and of course there are some who are close to the Labor and Liberal Party, and the Greens for that matter, but the vast majority of the Muslim community, and indeed the wider community, is so disconnected. And also, let's face it, the majority of politicians, in fact virtually every politician, and virtually the majority of the press, have no engagement with Islam, and in fact are not Muslim themselves. So the understanding our incredibly white Australia, I use that term in the modern sense rather than in the bad old days, in some ways rings true, because the engagement of this sort of debate brings up the fear of the other. And it's sort of obvious that a lot of Australians look at a niqab or look at a burqa and feel
and
uncomfortable about
see
that.
Other. There's an unresolved issue in this of two, of course, as to whether the PM can in fact overwhelm the will of the presiding officers. We will see that play out in time.
If he wants to.
Well, we shall see. Thanks to our outsiders this morning, Tim Kolbatch, his new book, Dick Hamer, The Liberal Liberal, is out now. Anthony Lowenstein from Guardian and other places, and Sabine Wolf from JWS Research.